good evening. Welcome to Yada Yaha Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you this evening. We have Don with us, Kirk, and James. How are you guys?
Good evening. Just fine. Thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
Good. Yeah, Shabbat shalom. Don, I have a question for you. You were at one time in your life an elder, a deacon, a big poobah, and the Seventh Day Adventist Church. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Were you a Christian? Would you have called yourself a Christian?
Oh yes.
Did you consider Paul's letters and the New Testament scripture?
Oh yes.
How did you come to know that Paul was a rascal, a false apostle, and that God's name was Yahweh, and that he wanted a grumpy old Marine to be his kid, part of his family?
I caused a lot of problems. Excuse me. I'm having voice problems. I caused a lot of problems within the hierarchy of the church in my one and only desire, and that was I wanted to read the Dead Sea Scrolls.
All right.
And one thing led to another, and I would not, even though I found them, I couldn't read them.
That's so unreasonable of you, Don, to want to get instruction directly from the creator of the universe by reading it from the oldest possible source. I mean, why would you want that when you can have it interpreted in dark dreams by a woman whose every attempt at prophecy had failed?
Oh, and that prophecy, as you say, correctly identified, they were the testimonies. They made a lot of sense. They still do to a lot of people. In fact, millions of people. But that wasn't my goal. My goal was to find and read the Dead Sea Scrolls. I'm sorry. Full stop. Put the grounding lugs down. I don't have any further to go.
So they would not help you. In fact, they discouraged you.
Oh, no way.
And you did not have the wherewithal, the tools really, to know how the Dead Sea Scrolls differed from the Masoretic text, and then how to translate the Masoretic text, and correcting for the deviations found in the Dead Sea Scrolls to get answers to your questions.
Well, my first big problem was that I tried to learn Hebrew many, many years ago, and I did not realize that what I was learning is not compatible with the early writings. And the dictionary that I got and the interpretations that I got were from the Jewish society.
Yeah, the Jewish Publication Society, the JPS. You've looked at the Dead Sea Scrolls. Have you seen any diacritical markings? That's the little points that Masoretes added.
No.
Are there any diacritical markings?
No.
In fact,
no.
Did the Masoretes exist when the Dead Sea Scrolls were scribed?
No.
What's the oldest text? You know what the oldest text is that the Masoretes influenced? You know when it dates to?
It would be Job.
Actually, no. The oldest text that the Masoretes wrote that we have access to is the Leningrad Codex. It was scribed in 1000 CE. The oldest Masoretic text is 1,200 years more recent than are the Dead Sea Scrolls that you wanted to read. So how is modern Hebrew, which is based on Masoretic vowel pointing, how's that going to be helpful?
Well, it didn't help me because I kept trying to learn the Hebrew, but the characters did not match. I had the characters, but they didn't match.
No, they don't match. No. As a matter of fact, most of the Dead Sea Scrolls are written in a pre-Babylonian Hebrew text, text that's either ancient or Paleo-Hebrew, where the letters convey words, where the letters convey images. And it's kind of what Kirk has devoted himself to as an artist, understanding the words based upon the images that comprise the words. And you won't find any of that in the Masoretic.
No. No, zero. No.
In the Masoretic, Yahweh was named the Yod, rather than being a hand reaching down and out to us, is an apostrophe. What can you learn from an apostrophe?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. You've got me off guard here. I don't know how to respond. Not a lot.
Yeah. So how did you? So you were frustrated. You were doing two important things. One is you were trying to find what the oldest manuscript said. You realized they were written in Hebrew, couldn't read them, so you started learning Hebrew, and then you learned that the only Hebrew that one can learn is modern Hebrew, and modern Hebrew is a derivative of the Babylonian Masoretic Hebrew, and it wasn't doing you any good. So what then, Don? By the way, does everybody know who Don is?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right. Don has a website that is really an extraordinary site. It reaches people now around the world. It's yhwh-qra.com. So it's Yahweh's Kara, Yahweh's invitation, is the website. In fact, this is something that Don wrote me this morning. He says, he's reflecting on how it all began. He says, many of my readers have asked for the history of my website. Going back over my archives, I realized it is posted on 6/6/2014, second and third hour. I posted my website in early summer of 2012. I continued to work on it daily, 6 months, and then released it on December 1 of 2012. In the following years, I've posted many editions, but have not changed any of the final edit. Correction, I have a few typos, and they were quickly noted by readers and corrected. Today, Google reports that it is read in every major country around the world.
Wow.
It is blocked by most Islamic states. The most visited page is Questioning Paul. I'm planning on transcribing the Introduction to God soon. It will be published on Richard's website. Maybe we need to be careful with Richard, because I got word today that Richard is blind.
What?
Harpal Richard was called.
Well, I know I've heard him complain a lot about his eyesight, but
yeah, no, he's irresponsible, according to a critic of mine.
Oh, okay.
I'm laughing, of course, because we all love Richard, and Richard has the Bless Yahweh site. Richard's testimony is pretty remarkable, but so is Don. So, Don, you were trying to do the right things for the right reasons. It wasn't working out, but here you are. You're part of Yahweh's family. You're part of the covenant. You're a huge part of sharing Yah's testimony with people around the world. How did that happen?
9/11.
Okay, so 9/11. You want to know why the rascals are trying to bomb our buildings? Who they are?
Yes.
And what motivates them?
I was terribly confused. and 9/11 just blindsided me. I watched it as it was actually happening. And I remember Pearl Harbor. Now, I wasn't there. Don't. I'm not that old. But I was a young man. I was a very, very capable young man. And I came into the kitchen, and my grandmother was crying with her head on the breakfast table. And she had stopped fixing breakfast. And that really upset me tremendously, because I had never seen, we were in the Depression then, or
yeah.
recovering.
Yeah, well,
very,
we actually weren't in a recovery
slowly.
Because FDR managed to prolong the recession 10 times longer than it could have lasted.
Seeing my grandmother cry was the same feeling I had at 9/11. And so I knew Islam pretty good. I knew it better than the average person.
So you knew it a lot better than I did. I didn't know squat about Islam when 9/11 happened.
Right. I will admit I knew a lot more about Muhammad on 9/11 than you did.
Yeah.
But we both crossed tracks with tea with terrorists, and so that was the beginning. But I could not resolve my reading of the Dead Sea Scrolls. But I did get deeply, deeply, deeply involved with the rest of the works that followed. So
yeah, so it was this path that we all, and I think sometimes, Don, it's extremely helpful, and I've received 3 letters today or in the last few days that all say the same thing, that it is extremely helpful knowing who God isn't and what isn't true. You know, Larry, you constantly say that Yahweh is not a religious deity. And understanding who God is not and what isn't true, that God does not have a church, that he hates religion, that he doesn't want to be worshipped, is often as important as a first step as coming to know who he is. And
yeah,
so,
well, by eliminating all the garbage, you get to know who he is. I mean,
correct.
If you anybody that had that kind of power, obviously wouldn't need people to, you know, be in submission to them or begging them or any other thing. And when he says he wants to be greeted as an individual, and we have that in the DSS,
right.
Then that absolutely eliminates the concept of any religious deity. And then once you do that, then you realize he's not, you know, omnipresent, and you realize he's not into submission and he hates religion. It, let's face it, when he goes through the words that describes who not to imitate, uh-huh. It encompasses every religion in the world. I mean,
yep.
There's not one of them that can escape it.
Now,
so,
Larry, I want to get back to you on the same line of questioning that I'm having here with Don, because I think it's important, because I think mm-hmm. our paths cross the same way. Don, you then read, as they were being written the very first published versions of Yada Yada, you know, version 1.0, and let's say we're on 10.0 now. You read right along, you went on this journey right along as I did.
Yes.
So you started with me.
You started with me
in Hosea, because Hosea was the first book. It began with the Azab separation, and it was in writing that collectively, at the same time, then we came to realize, wait a minute, this Christian myth that there's only heaven and hell, this Christian hypocrisy, this Christian ridiculousness of God saying, love me or I'm going to torture you forever in hell, that when we learned that at the same time. And so you would have 10 years ago come to realize, just as I was coming to realize it, wait a minute, the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms he's a lot different than the Christian God.
Oh, yes, yes. And at that time, I was not a Christian. I hadn't been a Christian for many, many, many years. I became a non-Christian about, I will guess, about 1976, between 1976 and 1978.
Okay.
I just blew up.
You were at the time that you were stopping to be a Christian, at the time that I was growing into becoming a Christian. So it really was that you were well down this path, and then our paths intersected. And together we came to know who Yahweh is, what he was offering in the covenant, and that there was no New Testament, all at the same time. And the only thing that that ever really created a major problem between the two of us is when we, and I preceded you on this one, when I realized that Paul was a false apostle. You're there now. It's your most viewed book, but we didn't get along so well at the beginning of that.
That's an understatement.
But clearly, as it's turned out, we went down this path together, didn't we?
Oh, yes.
Was there anybody else other than Frank at the time that was with you going down this path other than our relationship?
No, I did not know Frank.
Oh, you didn't even know Frank at that time. Okay. So we corresponded a lot. We talked a lot about questions, had a lot of fun on our emails, but we went down this path together, didn't we?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Until
questioning Paul, and then you said, "I'm not going to talk to that guy anymore. He's a son of a gun." And but after a while, it was Yosha that brought you back. It was what we call the Sermon on the Mount, but the Instruction on the Mount. It was Matanyah 5, 6, and 7. And once you came to realize that what I was saying about Paul is the same thing Yosha is saying about Paul. Then at that point, you said, you know, I'm happy as a ex-Marine to argue with this idiot Wen, but, you know, I don't really think I have a chance of standing up to Yosha. Isn't that basically what
That's
happened?
That's right. Yes. I tried every nook and cranny. I got with my brother. I got with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I discussed the Paul situation. And they're all theologians now. Two of them are older than me, and five or six of them are younger than me, but they're all either ministers or in the ministry of some form or another. And they all came to my defense, even though they knew I had bad feelings about my Christian background. They kept encouraging me that I was still a member of the Southern Baptist community because
they couldn't face the fact that you had learned that it wasn't valid.
Right.
Yeah.
And I had to come to that conclusion, Yada, on my own.
Yeah.
You had nothing to do with it other than start the turmoil.
Yeah. But I helped to point you in the right direction.
Well, you pointed me to the hill that I wanted to die on.
Yeah. That's okay.
And I did.
Yeah, I did. It didn't. And you did. And a new dawn was born on that day. A new and improved version.
Well, it was not in one day. It was,
yeah, I know.
It was,
yeah. Hey, Larry, you were once a nominal Christian. You were really hugely involved in politics. How'd you come to become part of the Covenant family and devote so much of your time now to sharing what Yahweh has to tell us?
Well, I was listening to you on a radio talk show, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I now understand I'd walked out of what I called organized religion, which mm-hmm. is where many people really start. That's
right.
I'd walked out of that some 10 years previous.
Just had Don.
But
had.
Yeah, I was consistently looking for something that added up. Would get people. I'd order books, all kinds of things, read them, and think, well, okay, that makes sense. But everything was to a certain degree it made sense. You know, it didn't completely fit because obviously if, what I was reading were King James Version Bible quotes where people are intentionally misled. So anyway, I heard you. And at the end of this, what caught my interest more than, you know, the exposing of Islam was the fact you started exposing steeples and churches and all the sun worship that is inculcated into the very nexus of the Christian religion. And, you know, from there, I just started reading yada yada. I don't even think it was in the same format that it is today.
No.
There was you had like a chapter that said Azab and Barith, and it was before I think it had all been put together as yada yada, but you had, you know, 600 pages I printed, so you had a lot of stuff out there. And I started reading it, and then from there, you know, it went to the format where you had the wine glasses, you know, you know, from there, I just continued to stay with the program, reading it. Again, you know, to people, I'm not somebody that does a lot of translation. You know, I can see bogus translations when I read them almost immediately, but I don't do a lot of translations. I stay with really the translations you or JB or somebody in the family does that's actually can be trusted. And I realize there's always a little option here and a little option there. But what I liked about your work was that you gave all the options and then you said, now here's why I chose this one.
I've given the argument against what I chose, and they say, yeah, but this is the reason I chose this one. And, you know, you're free to disagree. Right. Mm-hmm.
But that's where translations end. You know, I get a lot of people that read notes, and they go, okay, now where can I get this book? Well, you can't really do that. There's no book that's actually properly translated. That would all be religious material, and it's intentionally misleading often at times, and the rest of the time it's because somebody just went through the mechanics without thinking. And if you don't think and you don't know Yahweh, it's one of the reasons there are people I've heard praised for the work they did in Paleo-Hebrew, but I won't read them because I've read their commentaries, and they don't know Yahweh at all.
Sure.
Thus, their translations don't matter to me at all.
Yeah, in fact, isn't it pretty obvious when you read anything that may have, you know, a little angle that is accurate? Isn't it just immediately apparent when they don't know Yahweh?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
they'll use words like holy, as an example.
Yeah, they'll use holy. Yeah, they'll use words like church. You know, they'll use words like New Testament. They'll use words like Lord.
Old Testament.
Yeah, Old Testament.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just obvious to me when somebody doesn't know Yahweh. And I do not claim to be an expert translator by a wide margin. I'm certainly not a Hebrew scholar or a theologian. But I would tell you that I think that the single most important skill sets or attributes of an effective translator is the first thing is you've got to know Yahweh. If you don't know Yahweh, you shouldn't be translating his testimony.
If you don't know Yahweh, you're going to be out there at Kippurim and you're going to be starving yourself as opposed to having a feast.
Right.
I mean,
that's the first thing. You need to know Yahweh, and you got to say, okay, if there's various options with these words, let's choose the words that are consistent with his character and nature and plan. And the second thing is, you've got to recognize that we are really flawed. We're capable of error. So you need to have some humility towards it and say, you know, this is what I think it means. I've taken the time to look up these words. I have imperfect tools. I have an imperfect ability. But I'm passionate about it. So I'm going to walk you through how I made these choices and to be forthright that way. It's kind of like, you know, when people call and say, what day should I celebrate XYZ of the Moed Mikrayana? And I say, well, I won't answer that question. I'll tell you when I'm going to celebrate it, but I'll point you in a direction where you can read the criterion, and then you can decide for yourself. By the way,
one of the things I would really like to see would be, you know, if we take, like, Robert Ziegler as an example, and Lisa Bonet, and the doctor from Arizona, and I'm sorry I don't know his name. I've never actually spoken to him.
Jeff Grill.
Yeah, Jeff Grill. And, yeah, I'd like to, you know, one day, if they would
Jeff Grill, by the way, was the first person to come to know Yahweh as a result of yada yada.
Yeah, astounding. I've only heard him talk a couple of times, and they were short call-ins.
No, he called me once a week. We talk all the time on the telephone. He was the first person, and he came to know when we were still in that first volume with the Hosha translations. And, you know, he's Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Was raised Jewish.
No, I know. And that's why I'm saying all three of them are Jewish. And I would like to see them do a Shabbat show with you one night, because I'd like to hear their perspectives.
Yeah.
I know Lisa's, because I know Lisa very well. But,
Lisa's a smart cookie.
She's always tough to call in one week.
Yeah, she's also really feisty in the sense of, man, I tell you what. She's one. You better not try to mislead her, because she is not going to take it kindly. Yeah, she's very inquisitive, very thoughtful, and Lisa's great. Okay, so in any time, and because we exchanged hundreds upon hundreds of emails about the various books, did you ask questions and things? Did any time did I try to sell you on what I've concluded? Was I trying to ask you to ask you to follow
me
or believe as I believe? Any time, Yeller?
No. You would simply answer, this is why I say this, and you know, it was refreshing. First of all, you weren't selling anything. And by the way, there's another facet to this. And I don't mean to make a big deal out of it. It might even embarrass you. But, you know, there aren't a hell of a lot of people out there that have ran in some of the high-powered circles that you have, okay, who will give somebody like me the time of day. And that's the truth. I mean,
well, you're a zillion times more important than, and this is a billion times more important than anything I ever did. I mean, there is nothing more. There's nobody more important than you, and there's nothing more important than Yahweh's covenant. That is one of the things that would cause me embarrassment, because I know that's the way the world looks at it. This is the best job I ever had.
No, I'm sure that's true. Yeah, I mean, I got another friend.
You guys are my
time
favorite people I've ever worked
and
with.
A couple of others, but I have to tell you, typically high-powered people don't give, and I don't even mean to say high-powered people. People who have had the success in business that you have in the past, typically just don't give other people the time of day.
I'm criticized a lot for being short-tempered and quick to anger and suffer fools poorly and not taking a thoughtful approach to people's concerns. But
that's nonsense.
In truth, when it comes to sharing what I've come to know about Yahweh, that was not our experience together, was it?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
And is any time, either Don or Larry, is any time where you've come to a conclusion where I've said, nope, you're wrong, and I want nothing to do with you until you agree with my position, even a hint at that?
No, you don't.
No, I did.
Yeah, you did. You said that of me. That's true. And, in all fairness, I came on like a ton of bricks. Here I was quoting Paul, and then I went one day quoting him to assassinating him. And I really did it overnight. It was one day to the next. And, here I'm writing questioning Paul because our good friend David down in New Zealand heard a radio show that said that Paul annulled the Torah, and that Christianity is based on his annulment of the Torah, and that Paul said in Galatians that the Torah can't save. And he says, surely they have an errant translation, Dode wrote me. And I said, well, let me go translate it. Let me go find out. And you know, I was doing my best to make sense of it all until I got to the part where Paul was writing, there are two covenants, and the one, and the covenant that's memorialized in the Torah is of Hagar, and it can't save. I just, and it enslaves, and I'm going.
Yeah, you said that's when you fell over. I remember that.
I just fell over.
Yeah,
I just fell over. I was.
And by the way, I love David Crawford. I love
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
I really
guy.
Do.
Oh, he's a great guy. Straight yeah. as the day is long. Honest, and great guy, and both of his sons. Now, I was dealing with that, and I said, now I really have a choice. I'm going to try to figure this out. So I called my buddy Ken. I said, Ken, explain this to me. And Ken gave me a Christian interpretation of it. And I said, no, that's not it. It's not even remotely possible. Come on. Surely. You don't believe that? And then I looked up. I spent 2 days. I must have read 500 Christian explanations of it. And they all said the same thing. Paul was right in annulling the Torah. And I said, but you can't annul the Torah. It's God's Torah. You can't annul it.
Yeah, what you're saying at that point is, I don't believe God. I believe Paul.
Oh, yeah. I'm a rational guy. I said, there's no way that God inspired someone to tell him that he is incompetent. I mean, Paul said that God's an incompetent boob. And that he can't be trusted. And, you know, I'm
right.
not going to trust a guy that says that because, you know, I'd rather, if I'm going to trust and rely on somebody, I would much prefer it be God than somebody else.
Well, that'd be probably a good plan, you know.
So, you know.
That would
so
really
went,
be a good plan.
So I went from one day to the next trying to exonerate Paul and justify Paul to just despising the dude. So, yeah, Don, it was pretty quick. Now, Kirk, you were
yes,
really quiet so far.
Well,
how did you come to become a part of Yahweh's family?
Well, I didn't grow up Christian so much as my father was not. He didn't believe in churches, and my grandfather was a Presbyterian elder. Mm-hmm. So I knew about it, but I didn't grow up that way. Pop never took us to church, didn't want us to go to church. He thought the whole thing just avoided.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was about as honest a guy as I've ever met, so in that regard. So I just did what he wanted, and we played golf all the time, or rode horses or what have you.
Yeah.
Then when I got older, I started being bothered by the fact that I kept listening to radio broadcasts, especially in Australia, and there was a prophecy preacher, and I said, boy, you know, this stuff is true, and it's
yeah.
making sense. So I couldn't
yeah.
get rid of God. I just couldn't get on
yeah.
board with Christianity.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I
well,
read Philocopy.
Like
on and on and on. I kept reading things that then these people would pretty much prove that they were honest witnesses. They said what they saw, and his proof is all over the place that this is true. So I couldn't shake him. And at some point, I decided, well, I'm down to Christianity because only two choices I could find is Christianity, and there's rabbinical Judaism. So they have no Yosha, so I couldn't go that way. And then so I found the best scholar I thought at the time I could find, a PhD from Stanford who spoke. Could read and write Hebrew, can read and write Greek and Coptic, and had the biggest Bible collection, oldest scriptures. You could physically go see them. I told you all those things that I've seen. You know, when you say such and such and such and such, I've seen those books. I mean, first editions, I've seen just about everything that you could find in a museum. He had one of, had great expense. And so I kind of set my course with him for a long time, and fortunately for me, he died. And I was still, there were three things that I couldn't deal with in Christianity other than I knew when I read your book, when Terry heard you first, you know, on Stan's show, and she gave me 50 sheets, or she printed off 25 or 50 sheets or something, and I read it. I said, well, you know, about half of the stuff that's in there I already know is true.
Mm-hmm.
So I better check out the other half. And it took me about 2 weeks, and I walked away from Christianity like I never knew what it was.
The same thing worked for you that worked for the other two guys, which was that
mm-hmm.
when you're actually looking at what Yahweh said,
right,
in the way that he said it, it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the more closely you examined it, the more consistent it was, the more it made sense.
I don't know whether you're aware of this, but the Baptists do this a lot, because I grew up in Baptist land, so you'd always visit other people's churches. And they have this thing where I remember going to with a friend, and they had this big sermon all day about reconciling James to Paul. They wouldn't pick on Shimon Kephas. They would always be his James works and Paul's, freedom in Paul sort of stuff. And I would say, well, if they're all on the same page, why do they have to reconcile them?
More importantly, why did Paul condemn
Shimon Kephas? Yeah.
Why did Paul condemn Peter?
Yeah.
If they're on the same page.
And the second thing that bothers me is the red letter editions. Paul didn't have any of them.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't ever quote it.
Never quoted. You won't find a red letter, which is supposed to be Yosha's words, Jesus'
mm-hmm.
words in Christianity. The red letter editions have what he said in red, and you won't find any red in Paul's letters. He claims to represent a guy. He never quoted.
Paulos did say that he wished that Shimon and Yohanan and the rest were castrating.
That's correct.
That's what he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Now, they toned it down a bit in their KJV Biblia, but
he wanted them condemned and castrated. They were the enemy.
Yeah.
Yep.
There was no place about that. So
the third thing I couldn't figure out why we didn't want the same deal Abraham had. It seemed a lot simpler than churches.
Oh wow. Wow.
Truly.
So you just like Don, and to a large degree even Larry,
uh-huh.
you were well on your way before we met.
Well, if I couldn't find the older stuff to read, I couldn't get there. I guarantee you I wouldn't get there without some help, without what you had laid out there. And then I read it like I never put the thing down.
But you were well on your way. All you needed was maybe a flashlight and a kind of a point in the right direction,
kicking the butt, probably. Yeah.
Somebody wrote it and called it a speed boost today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said, one person wrote today and said, I had already let go of Paul because I couldn't reconcile what Paul said with what God said, and it just seemed to me to be stupid. Plus, Paul is so demeaning of others that I had given up on Paul. And then somebody pointed me to questioning Paul, and he says, I read that. He says, I read that thing cover to cover in 2 days. And he said, everything I read in it confirmed what I had come to know. And he says, at that point, I had a speed boost. Now I'm on well on my way.
Yeah, I read that. He's on a mission now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be everybody's mission.
Exactly.
There's so much going on out here in the world. I mean,
yeah.
Now it's race wars every other day.
Right.
Or it's this or that or the other thing.
Yeah. Religious wars, race wars.
Yeah, nothing in this world really matters when you start looking at it. I mean, it just doesn't even matter.
No.
It's just so childish, and
it only matters in one regard, Larry. I think it does matter in one. I'm going to change that. I think it matters in two regards. This will not be inconsistent. I'm not contradicting you here. I think it matters in two regards. What's happening in the world confirms what Yahweh told us was going to happen, and every time that something happens exactly as he told us it was going to happen. Like the Syrian war and the ultimate fall of Damascus and what it leads to with the dismantlement.
And a big country forcing Israel to give up land and so forth.
A country that sends its envoys by ships around the world. Yeah, that country. Every time that we read this nonsense that's going on in the world that is an exact fit for what Yahweh predicted, Well, you know,
that matters. That matters.
Because what Yahweh is doing is proving that he's God and that we can trust him. And I think that's important. Do we need the proof that he's God and we can trust him? No. I did initially, but I don't anymore. But that doesn't
mean we got the proof. You know, when you've got gematria spelling out, "Hi, my name is Yahusha."
Yeah. Of course.
Wow. They didn't have computers back then, you know.
But it's still important and relevant because there's a lot of people that don't know him. And so for us to focus on it and share it, because, you know, here we're talking about family. But outside of this show, like Chattering Myths, we talk mostly to people who aren't family. And so being able to affirm that Yahweh can be trusted and through prophecy is still important. So I think it matters from that point of view. The second reason it matters is that the first condition of the covenant is to walk away from your country. And so if we don't talk about everything that's wrong with our country, with our military, with our economics, with nationalized religion and that sort of thing, if we don't talk about that, then people won't understand why it is that God wants us to walk away from it.
Yeah.
I think it's important from that point of view. And I think the third reason it's important is because it's the choice. And it's the choice. Are you going to trust these weasels or do you want to trust God? That's the choice. So I think it does matter from those points of view, but it's you're right, it's all worthless. Now, JB, you were never a Christian. You were an agnostic. How'd you?
I was an agnostic. Kind of pretty nominally Christian, but that was, very, very, I think I went to church maybe five times my entire life.
Okay. That's pretty nominal.
Yeah.
So what's your story? How'd you come to know Yahweh and choose to be part of his family?
Well, like I said, I like kind of raised nominally Christian, but as early teens, I realized that religion was, pretty much bullshit.
Yeah,
I'm not even going to repeat that it's bullshit.
No, but by the way, Yahweh uses the term. I mean, so he speaks about the dung of a bull and association with the influence of religion. So I'm sure we can use it.
Yeah. So I left that, but most of my teenage years in that atheist, well, more agnostic, but, kind of atheist. I'd argue atheism with religious people just to really get under their skin. it was just, for me, it was fun. I liked arguing. My mom lived in a very Mormon town, and we would get Mormons come door to door, and
I would get
the atheist and argue and, try and get them questioning their religion by the time they left, not out of any sense of hoping they'd come to know God, because at the time I didn't know him. It was just
It's the world's third dumbest religion.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think that Islam is the dumbest religion, and while Scientology is really dumb, it's not as dumb as Islam, and Mormonism would be the world's third dumbest religion.
So Scientology is, and I've watched two-hour documentaries on that since you had brought it up on the show, and I got to tell you, it's just a CIA operation. It's a information gathering service.
Yeah.
Where they're all watching each other. It is the weirdest concept I've ever seen.
I saw that show. That's absolutely true. I mean, it sounded exactly like. I mean, they indoctrinate them. They record everything, and then they use it against them.
Yeah. It's really the same thing is true of any criminal enterprise. And I think that Scientology is a criminal enterprise. But almost all criminal enterprises work that way. They get you in, they compromise you, they have proof that you've done something that is immoral, embarrassing, or illegal, and they threaten to use it if you ever leave their ranks. In Islam, they just say, if you leave Islam, we're going to kill you. And, some people don't want to be killed.
A little more to the point.
So you realized that religion was bogus. You love debate. So you're a reasonably evidence-driven, rational individual. And you knew that the religious arguments were just ridiculous.
Yeah. I consider myself logical to a fault. I really reached a point where I accepted – there probably was a God in the sense of a creator. I didn't think he was knowable, but it was obvious to me looking at the world that, and what I knew of science, that this didn't come about by accident. But like I said, so I guess you'd call it, say, more deist even than agnostic at that point. But
yeah.
That was kind of where I was. And what really got me started was Gerald Schroeder's work with the science of God and the hidden face of God. And so I read through, I heard him on an interview on the radio and went out and, you know, that day really and bought his books and started reading through those. And what he did with Science of God and the creation account, you know, made it, got me to that point where I was like, okay, I can't say anymore that God's not knowable, because it's clear, at least Genesis was inspired. This creation account did not, was not written by some cave dwelling or, you know, some mud hut dwelling shepherd in the, you know, 2000 BC.
Right.
There's no way they could have known that. So at that point I was really interested in coming to know more, and I tried reading, I was very much in the mindset religion and God all went together. And I'm like,
yeah,
well,
Gerald Schroeder will take you there. I mean, that's why I don't recommend his book. I agree that what he did in terms of relativity was brilliant, but he takes you right to Kabbalah and Rabbinic Judaism.
Yeah. Well, not just that, it's, you know, our society as a whole, religion, God and religion are basically equated, and that's how we're raised to think. If you believe in God, you're religious. And it takes a lot to learn to separate that.
Yeah, it does.
So,
that's a hard separation.
Well, that's something my dad never learned to do. It killed him. You know, I mean, he when he died, he's dead. You know, I mean, and that's another thing. A lot of people just can't accept the fact that people they know are dead. I mean, let's get real. I mean, that's why one of the biggest misquotes you'll ever hear is "forgive a brother," and then everyone runs around calling you bro, and you know, one of the things I absolutely hate. And they pretend that we're all brothers in stupidum together. It is just insane. I mean, you know, we're talking thousands out of billions. I'll forgive a brother. I really will. For almost anything.
But how is faith in that which is obviously untrue, demonstrably untrue, how does faith in something false provide a beneficial result?
Well, it can't. It doesn't.
No, it can't. I mean, there's no chance that Pauline Christianity is true. It cannot produce a viable result. Plus, Yahweh was really explicit on how to become part of his family, and he doesn't have any equivocation. There's no wavering. There's no various paths. There's one path to becoming part of his family. You either accept it or you're estranged. It's pretty straightforward.
Hmm.
So ultimately, you found Yadiyah, started reading it.
Well, first I started, you know, talking to all the religious people I knew, Christians, Jews, and, you know, trying to find out. You know, my first thought was, you know, I'm going to read the Bible. So I went and bought a, you know, King James Bible. Like I said, I didn't know where to look at that point. So I read, and I started reading through that, you know, starting to Genesis, and I'm like, none of this makes any sense. So, you know, I'd go and I start talking to people like, oh, well, they, you know, try the New Living Translation, try the New International Version. And so I'd borrow Bibles from people here and there, and all of them, none of them really made sense. So I kind of reached a point where I almost gave up. I was like, yeah, this. Yeah, without knowing Hebrew, the original language, there's no way, because that was what I loved with a lot of Schroeder's work, where he would talk about what the Hebrew word meant and why it was mistranslated. And so I'm like, yeah, I need that. But I had no clue where to go for that. I didn't even know where to start.
Yeah, like either we were talking about yesterday, England, who is the fellow trying to understand the origins of life, and he said that he fell in love with the Torah, but the first thing he came to realize is that the common translations were untrustworthy, and that you really had to drill down and translate it yourself and to come to know what the words mean to get anything out of it. And then if you do, it is extraordinarily wonderful in the subtlety of the detail and also magnificent in the grand scope of what it presents. So, that's what you found.
Yeah. And at that same time, I'd been reading through Prophet of Doom, and I was probably on my second or third time through Prophet of Doom when I saw the link to Yadiyah, and I was like, well, let's see, you know, I've enjoyed this book, I've learned a lot from him from this, let's see what he has to say here, and started reading that, and, you know, that really gave me the kind of the skill set, you know, to be able to study it on my own, which is what I needed. It pointed me in the right direction to where I could actually go in and start. Like I said, you know, the English translations were horrible, but I didn't know where to start as far as learning Hebrew because, yeah, I just didn't know where to start. So reading through your resources, I started buying all the resources, like you talked about Logos and the books you used in there and just the interlinears, dictionaries. So I started buying all that. I'm like, okay, so this is where I need to start. And just kind of went from there. I learned a lot from reading Yada Yada, but also learned, you know, mostly just gave me what I needed, you know, kind of put me in that right direction and showed me the path I needed to go down if I wanted to learn it for myself.
Yeah, provided you with a list of kind of the tools to use and how to use those tools and what to use them on, what to look at. Yeah. You know, so what we've all talked about here, even indirectly, you, Kirk, you the only one didn't mention Prophet of Doom, but do you know why I was on Dr. Stan's show?
Because that was the first time that you had introduced Yada Yada.
Well, yeah, I was on
Stan's show
because he wanted me to speak out against Islam. And I did show after show after show with Dr. Stan on Islam. The last show I did with Dr. Stan was on Paul. And I said, you know, Christianity is a false religion and Paul's a false prophet. It was the single most listened to show ever for Dr. Stan. From that was over. He would that was the last time I was on his show. But even you, ultimately, and your wife, Terry, came to have kind of a light shone on on Yah's testimony because of Prophet of Doom. It hadn't been for Prophet of Doom, there'd been no Dr. Stan interview. And so we'd all come to know who God wasn't. Every one of us has the same thing in common. We'd all rejected religion. We'd all come to know that the religious God could not be real, and that we were all still realize there had to be a God and that we were willing to invest the time to get to know him. I think that's common with all of us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don, even, isn't that common with you?
Oh, yes.
And so we just all ended up going down this path together.
Basically, that's true. I mean, we've learned a lot together. We could go through all of them, the things. One of the latest things, which was pretty astounding, and that it was so obvious, that's what's astounding, is that, you know, no dead body got up, and there was no Yahusha zombie, you know. I mean,
no.
It's so obvious.
I mean, it's just so obvious that there wasn't a bodily resurrection.
Right.
And
that's just taken for granted that God could not die.
I mean, it's just so obvious that God couldn't die. And so
he couldn't
die for yourself.
Sure.
Right.
And he can't be in Sheol, can he? I mean,
no.
You know.
And we learned that there can't be a renewed covenant, therefore a new testimony, when Yahweh tells us that the reaffirmation of his covenant isn't with Gentiles. It's with Yisrael and with Yehuda, and that the basis
in
of its
Jerusalem.
Renewal, yeah, and the basis of the renewal is the incorporation of the Torah into the very fabric of our lives. Oops.
Yeah, that's how out of step Torah is, right, or how out of vogue it is with Yahweh, that he's going to inculcate it into every intricate nexus that forms our being. It's just one of those things that, you know, at first you want to think renewed, and then, of course, that was just a half step off, and so then you see, we see the very second it's renewed.
Right.
I mean, it shows us right there in Zechariah.
Right. 2033.
You're my family, and right there at the end of the Battle of Armageddon.
He's going to reconcile his relationship with his children. Wouldn't you think that it seems pretty obvious to me that he's going to reconcile his relationship with his children, Yisrael, and with Yehuda on the Day of Reconciliations?
Yeah.
That would be obvious. If you're calling it afflictions, you'll probably never figure it out.
You would never figure it out. Yeah.
Quite frankly, I was delighted to get away from the New Testament and just stick to the Torah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's because I knew, I was always taught that, like in the first year, they figured out of the King James that there were 30,000 errors found, And now we know there's 300,000 discrepancies or differences between every version and a version in 180,000 plus words, and you go, oh, this is hopeless.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
I mean, I like Batignol, and we can glean things from it, and I've gone back to it, and I've bought books so I can read the, I can at least translate a little bit of the Greek, but so I'm not totally ignorant of what said as best we can
figure it out.
But
to like Batignol, which is the only book, because of the instruction on the mount, 5, 6, and 7, I think is particularly when you can review 5, 6, and 7 from a Hebrew mindset. I think that 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount, is a brilliant presentation of who he is and why he came, and I love the chapter where he undercuts, undermines, and just completely obliterates religion and politics, and then I love how that is followed by the Olivet Discourse, where he is. Where he makes the transition, and we did Kirk a number of shows based upon what Jason had said from Canada on the transition into the Olivet Discourse, and when you think of that from a Hebrew mindset, oh my!
But that's the key word from a Hebrew mindset. I had to kind of jump into Torah constantly till I've got my head straight, and then I can go in there and read it, and I can figure out what, you know, I'm like Larry, I can spot it pretty quick now. It's, in that regard, I can say, okay, that's nonsense, because that doesn't agree with the Torah at all. So,
yeah, well, I think any of us can, because the minute somebody starts talking about, I want to get on my knees, and I'm going to be judged by my Creator, and, you know, the typical religious stuff that you hear. That follows tradition. I mean, the second they do that, I mean, we're saying, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
You want to live on your knees? You know, because if it doesn't make sense, it's probably because it's not true. I mean, it wouldn't make sense that Yahweh died. So, of course, it makes sense. He says, why have you forsaken me? Now we've got a body of a man dying.
Right.
You know, and that nephesh, not Nesama, Nefesh, and entering Sheol. But I don't think most people would know the difference between Nefesh and Nesama, do you?
No, they're synonymous to most people, especially most Christians.
Yeah,
can I toss something in here?
Yeah, please, Don.
Okay, now, Larry.
Okay.
Mr. Meany.
Yeah. I have my moments.
Says the Marine.
You opened this can of worms. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Why did the ram run off the cliff?
Why did the ram run off the cliff? Because he didn't know any better, probably.
He didn't see the U-turn.
Okay.
You started.
I'm believing that.
You started this nephew.
Well, you know, that's kind of strange, too, because I just before I came in here, I was sitting in this chair that kind of helps me relax my back, which is the only problem I really have right now. But I just saw walruses that had walked 2 or 3 miles inland, and they got up on a big hill, and apparently walrus follow each other. And then they saw the ocean and wanted to get down to it, and one of them just took the shortcut right off the cliff. And they all followed. And at the end of that, there were 60 dead walrus.
Oh,
and it reminds me of people.
Yes.
Now, you know, it's interesting, Don and Larry, that the critic today who... I said I was essentially a false teacher because of the conclusions that I shared and the interpretations of why Yahweh spoke about cross-dressers, even brought it up when men and women actually wore the same outfit back in the day, that why would he have brought it up when everybody wore robes? But the comment was that everybody follows blindly. I didn't hear a lot of blind following in any of this. I didn't hear a lot of walrusing.
Yeah, no, I did read that email. Yeah, I didn't even know why that was particularly pointed out. I mean, you know, the bigger thing we're fighting, it's pretty easy to get some guy to know that, you know, you don't follow Bruce Jenner's example. But, you know, it's hard to get people to understand you don't follow the preacher's example. You don't follow the priest's example. You don't follow the rabbi's example.
No.
And that's where people are lost. It's not cross-dressing people in San Francisco.
Well, if you're a Christian, you don't follow Yosha's example either. Right?
No, you don't, do you? But you are following the preacher or the priest or whoever, you know, and that's the sad part of the thing.
Well, let's get back to
the
trauma. You ought to keep saying that these people can't process this.
Right.
I think that is a major, major understatement. I think that in all of your works is the biggest of your understatements. And you do make a lot of understatements.
That's quite a statement you're making. That's a giant statement. Why would you say that? I for one, I'm one of these people that I do not believe everybody on earth has an asama. I don't believe it. I really don't believe it.
I don't either, by the way.
Yeah, I don't either. I can't prove it, but I don't think everybody has one either.
Let's put that aside and have Frank complain. No, I totally agree with you on that, but I side with Glenn a couple of times when he chides you on some of your usages, and I think your most understated usage is they, meaning people with a nesama, can't process this, and that is because, and I think you should pursue this more, that nesama has been neglected, it's been turned off, and the statement is they can't process this, is the point I'm trying to make. They
Let me play off that a bit, Don, if I could. Larry, you were a bodybuilder, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I'm a fitness trainer, and I did a lot of fitness and running. And,
And when you were in top shape, your muscles were highly functional. I mean, if somebody gave you the jar that other people couldn't open, you could open the damn jar, could you?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if somebody said, Larry, let's go run 5 miles, you'd go run 5 miles.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, if somebody said, let's press 200 pounds, you'd press 200 pounds.
Yeah, of course.
You used your muscles. You exercised them regularly. You focused on your muscles, and your muscles worked really well, didn't they?
Yeah. And then when you get injured and you're sitting around for several years, it's not the same thing anymore.
Right. So now your muscles don't work as well, do they?
Yeah, they atrophy. Right.
They atrophy. Sure. Now, an asoma is a concept. It's the it's this muscle in our brain, if you will, that enables us to be discerning, to ascertain right from wrong, false and true, good and bad, beneficial and counterproductive. It's a muscle in our brain that is used to be discerning, to be judgmental, to exercise good judgment. It's my contention that political correctness sought to negate that muscle, to have us stop being judgmental. And I think that religion universally precludes people from exercising their ability to be rational. So I think it's just a muscle that's not used.
They flat out say we shouldn't be judgmental. Well, if you're not judgmental, I mean, if you're not making good judgments,
You're dead.
I don't even know how a person can drive a car.
Every religious person, you know, Muslims used to constantly harangue me for saying, you know, you have no right to be judgmental. You need to respect my religion. You can't be judgmental of my religion. And Christians say, you know, you should not judge. And yet Yahweh saying, I want you to exercise good judgment. Be judgmental, for crying out loud. Question everything.
Can I make a point, please?
Please. Mm-hmm.
This is Hendro from England.
Yeah. Hi, Hendro.
Hey, Hendro.
Hi. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, how you doing?
Hello.
My question has been, you know, why do people stick with religion and that sort of thing? I recently started, I had a fascination when I was younger with card tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know how a card trick is done, it loses the, in inverted commas, magic, because
right.
you understand how it's done.
Right.
The illusion is broken. And I think with religion, a lot of people want to stay in the illusion.
Right.
Famous film, The Matrix, there was one of the characters actually knew The Matrix was false, and he went to those who controlled The Matrix and said, I know it's not real, but I can't deal with reality. I can't deal with the truth.
Yes.
And that's what I'm finding with religion.
Yes.
It's like
yes.
prison.
Yeah, I don't think people really want to know.
No,
the moment they're confronted with something that is in conflict with their faith, they discount it by discounting the credibility and the motives of the person who brought them that information.
They hate you,
yeah. Is that ad hominem argument?
Yes, mm-hmm. ad hominem arguments almost universally.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
that's a good point, Hendro, because what you're really saying, and what you're saying too, Craig, really, is that as soon as they have to question what is real, they get on shaky ground and they're lost. To me, reality supported Yahweh. You know, it didn't disassociate itself from him.
Right.
It's what's real. And I think that a lot of people are afraid they're going to fall into the fog of there is no God, then. That's what you're saying. And, you know, and I guess
and
there's other
if
people.
If I may
that,
say so, Hendro, to get right down to the crux of it, bottom line here, this entire program was devoted to a singular thought, and that is every one of us is part of the family because we reasoned ourselves there, because we wanted to know the truth. We devoted the time to find the truth. We examined the words, and we thought about them, and we analyzed them exercising good judgment. Every one of us is part of the family for exactly the same reason we exercised our nesama.
I've spoken to a few what I would call intelligent people recently, tradesmen, plumbers who deal with water, electricians who deal with electricity. So
mm-hmm.
we are not like water or electricity, because the one thing they have in common is they always go for the path of least
yeah,
resistance.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
Now, we've actually taken a path of resistance. We're unusual.
Correct. Yes.
The easiest thing is just to follow the religion, follow the crowd.
Right. Because Yahweh took the path that man resists.
Yeah.
And that's why he told us to walk away from the fellowship of man, from our father's family, from our country, from Babylon, and all that it represents, is because unless we're willing to walk down that same path that he walked, which is single file and very exclusive, and he said, you know, you think that he would have said, Don, this happens to be amongst your favorite statements, but do you think he would have said the way is narrow and few that are that find it that leads to life, and the way is broad and many are those that find it that leads to death and destruction, if Hendro's argument wasn't valid?
Yeah. Reconcile that.
Well,
yeah.
His argument is very, very good. And you've got to realize the creator of the universe used those laws of dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're here.
Yes. Now, Don, you've been consistent for a long time. You have consistently focused on the Nesama and the importance of the Nesama in our in us coming to know, accept, understand, and then share the truth. And by the same token, you are consistent with saying that the lack of use of our nesama, of our seat of judgment, of our ability to be discerning, is the single biggest problem that plagues humankind. I would agree with you.
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I guess I have de-emphasized it from what although I talk about it a lot, that I have de-emphasized it only in the sense that I wonder how much good it does to tell people that the reason that you don't know what we know is that you've been unthinking.
You can't.
Is that, you can't. And the reason you can't is because you've been trained to atrophy your nesoma. You've been trained not to use it. You've been told that to be judgmental is the greatest of all sins, when in fact to be judgmental is the very purpose of the nesoma. So you don't know what we know because you can't.
But you know, we've talked a lot about experimentalism, which became progressive education, which basically is where social to sexual humanism sprouted from in the school systems. I mean, that's people know this. But
yes.
I tell you, this is a different generation. I was the kind of the generation that in a degree in education, you had to take courses in this, and we used to just laugh at it.
Yeah.
The next generation did not. I mean, it was a way of life.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but still, you're
from
talking
one generation
about
to the next.
You're talking about secular humanism, and that is no doubt a religion. There's
absolutely
a whole ethos that
absolutely
runs
it's
through.
It's a philosophical point of view. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a philosophical
but
belief system.
Religion is diametrically opposed to making judgments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, the Christian religion is anyway. Let me say that.
Exercising good judgment is wholly opposed to Islam. Islam just means surrender. Those who questioned the Quran lost their faith. So that's one of the parting lines of the Quran. It says those who questioned the Quran lost their faith. So
you've covered how many billion, 2.5 billion people anyway. So
judge lest you be judged. So they Christians have also been hoodwinked based upon lousy translations two times over. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yosha did not say Crino, and if he had said Crino, it would have don't separate lest you be separated. And separation is the very essence of virtually every part of his vocabulary. The covenant was cut. The separation. So they, you're either with God or you're separated from him. That's the whole thing. But I think that socialist secular humanism chose to make being judgmental the ultimate crime, because knowledge became too easily available, and they were afraid that if people thought about what they had access to in terms of information, they would be difficult to control. So they made processing that information rationally, logically, a sin. Now, in the case of religion, they had to kill this notion of a willingness to do, Don, what you wanted to do. You
That's
questioned
right.
The tenets of the religion based upon the differences between what they claimed and what the oldest witnesses had said, and you wanted to question the oldest witnesses to see what God had to say, and they would not tolerate that. That was wholly and completely unacceptable. Why? Because if you read the Torah and you compare the Torah to what Christians say, it's the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be the same God.
So they have to shun you.
The same God. Yeah, they have to shun you. So I mean, this entire program has been for a singular person, a singular reason. There is no one blind that finds Yahweh's family. You can't find your way home blind. Now, I'm sure a blind person has listened to what Yahweh has said and found their way home, but I'm talking about somebody who is unwilling to closely examine and carefully consider what Yahweh is saying, and then rationally evaluate it. Unless you are that person, you aren't finding your way home.
Like I said, the open-minded.
Right. Yeah, they said the Torah is easy to understand if you're open-minded.
If you're open-minded.
But it's open-minded. It's not just open-minded. It's more than just being receptive. Now, being receptive is a big deal because most people aren't. You've also got to want to engage in the search. You've got to prioritize the search. And then you've got to be willing to go with where it's lead.
Mm-hmm.
What good is searching if you find something you say, oh, well, I don't like the way that looks,
like
but it's
that.
Different. Yeah, that's different than what I want to be true, so I'm going to close my eyes to it.
Isn't that, is there an example of that in the Torah when I think it was Nathan was told to go and dip in a river, and he said, I thought you were going to do this, and I thought you were going to do that, and you didn't?
You're right.
Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was uncomfortable because it's not what he expected. Yeah. I think that Moshe was uncomfortable initially because Yahweh approached him in a way that he did not expect. You know, it's I think we all start off that way, and it's ultimately Yahweh's testimony is so subtle in the details, so majestic in the scope, so consistent, so profound, such a straight, direct plan that it's, as you say, Larry, it's the only straight game in town.
That's fact. One of the things you point out is there's a when I was reading through Yada Yada, I don't know exactly where it is, but it was even the first time I read the entire book, you talked about these signs. They're like little fingers pointing, you know, everywhere. You know, and it's so funny because we're right here in the chat room. Somebody brought up Sin, and you know, Sin, of course, was represented by the crescent moon in Babylon. He was the god,
right.
And they said, "Well, yeah." And
then Palmyra,
you know,
by
Muslims
the way.
Today worship. Worship sin, and yes, and everything that is good, of course, in Islam is halal, as you
halal.
Know.
Halal, so, Satan's name.
You know, these are some mighty big fingers pointing at things here. You know.
Oh yeah. I mean, the moment I saw that, I was blown away. I just said, okay, God, you've got a sense of humor. That's really funny.
It is true, you know. So you sit there and you look at all these signs, and then pretty soon you begin to see signs everywhere. That's one of the reasons that any of us can sit down and look at, you know, at traditional translations and go, well, this is garbage. You know, they start talking about, first of all, biblically, and then the next thing you know, grace is used, and then the amen we see in there, and pretty soon, you know, we've just named every pagan god, you know,
yeah,
that can be named under the
sun. You know,
sun.
The one that, that really got me, I mean, there's a lot of them that got me, but this one really hit me between the eyes. It was such a turning point for me. The passage that I had the most trouble with, by far the most trouble with when I was a Christian, is, my God, why have you forsaken me? I couldn't figure it out. If he was supposed to be the totality of God, how could God forsake him?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask a Christian, what does that mean? There's not one Christian in the world that can answer that question. What does it mean? How can he be God? How can God die for you if he's saying to God, my God, why have you forsaken me? And it was one of those statements that I said, you know, I can't come up with an answer. There is no answer for that.
There's no reasonable answer at all. I can tell you what one of them tried to tell me. Well, at that point, he had to take all the sins of the world upon him all at once. That was her answer. I said, no.
But he didn't. But then the thing that struck me is, wait a minute. He's quoting from Psalm 22. Why didn't anybody tell me that he's quoting from Psalm 22? So what does Psalm 22 say? It answers why God is separating himself from us. The answer to the question, he asked a question, God, why are you separating yourself from me? The answer to the question is found in Psalm 22, which is what he was quoting. He was giving us the cotton-picking answer. And when you read Psalm 22, you have an eyewitness account of crucifixion, 1,500 years before the torture was even invented? And you're going, okay, I now have an eyewitness account on what happened on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim. I understand those 3 days. That's pretty cool. And then you find out, now it all makes sense. God didn't die.
Right. As you pointed out, you know, apart from the Torah, there's no hope of understanding Yahusha. That's the truth.
That's the truth. Yeah, and here's this psalm written by the world's foremost expert on the Torah, telling us exactly what he was going to say 1,000 years before he said it. I mean, come on, folks. How do you think your way through that and not come to embrace the Torah and prophets? You know, I was dealing with Kirk. You brought up the Christians' mm-hmm. Take on the Ten Commandments, and mm-hmm. I said, so can you tell me when Yahusha said the word Bible?
Not yet.
Can you tell me what he called? What did he, when he referred to the testimony of the Father, what did he call that?
He called it his words, or he called it his Torah.
The Torah, the prophets, or the Psalms. Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Torah,
I mean,
Psalms.
It's only had three answers. What did you find in the Torah? What does the Torah and prophets say? Or he would say, I think it was once or twice he put them all together,
the
Torah,
Psalms,
prophets,
yeah.
and Psalms. But even when he said Torah and prophets,
mm-hmm.
he referred to them as a single entity. Because,
Torah.
Isn't there prophecy in the Torah?
Absolutely.
Isn't there
and
Torah in the prophets?
And the prophets.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Single entity. Torah and prophets. But if he's going to use the term Torah and prophets, and once Torah, prophets, and Psalms, what should we call his? If he calls the inspired testimony of the Father, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, what's the most likely name that we can use that has the highest likelihood of being precisely accurate?
Torah,
I say Yahweh's words.
Yeah, but Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Yahweh's Torah.
I'm going to go with either Torah and prophets, or Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, Yahweh himself refers to his teaching as Torah. He refers to his future history as prophets. And he refers to the lyrics to the songs about these things as psalms. But the fact of the matter is, the term that Yahweh uses the most to describe his testimony is Debar. So, Larry, you're right. There's nothing wrong with using Debar, because that's the
Debar.
Term. That's the word that he uses the most, because his testimony is comprised of words.
The reason I say Yahweh's words is it also hopefully draws a distinction between religious material and his words.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
I've said it before. You know, he doesn't expect much out of me. You know, he's not stupid, so he doesn't expect much out of me at all. But he does want me to come to know him through his words and seriously consider his words and his nature and who he is and what he's offering, so I can even respond to the offer appropriately. And that's the crux of the matter. It always goes back to his words. It seems to me that a woman was attacking you and talking about how can just be getting into words, a study of Torah. Is that what she was saying? I mean, first of all, you have to have the right words, or you don't even know what you're looking at.
Correct.
Right? I mean,
yeah. I've tried to understand scripture, too, because it's so fraught with religious connotations. I've tried to get that one out of my vernacular as well.
Me, too. I don't like it. It's not as bad as, say, holy or something really trashy, totally like that. But I think scripture carries with it a lot of religious connotations.
I do, too. It's a term I will occasionally use, and every time I use it, I probably should have done a better job than that, because it's a Latin term, and God didn't communicate in Latin. you know, why not? Why not use the terms that he uses? He used Ed and Eduth witness testimony a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He used Imra promise a lot, and he used Debar words a lot. You can't go wrong. Yeah, you can't go wrong using Yahweh's witness, Yahweh's testimony, Yahweh's words, Yahweh's promise. Yahweh's Torah, his teaching, Yahweh's guidance, Yahweh's prophets. I think all of those are accurate, consistent depictions.
May I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Craig, I've heard it said that somewhere in Torah, Yahweh says of his own words, if you find a mistake, you're free to ignore it or walk away.
Right,
is that
a single mistake.
True?
Yeah, it's there's two places. They're both in Dabarim, and what he says is, I'm going to give you the test to understand if something is from me or not from me. And if it has a single error in being inconsistent, therefore a contradiction, if it has a single error in history, or if it has a single error in prophecy, then you should disassociate from it. It's not from me.
That blew my mind. How do you raise the bar from there?
How do you know? How do you raise the bar from there?
Yeah,
I'm saying it. Yeah, he's saying it has to be absolutely consistent with what he says. So no contradictions. So no contradictions whatsoever. No errors in its presentation of history. And of course, Yah's testimony is the oldest and most detailed history book ever written. And it has to be precisely accurate in terms of its predictions of the future, and not one error in contradiction, history, or future presentation. Yeah, where is there a higher standard than that?
Yeah, as was said earlier, the 300,000 errors in what they call the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, 300,000 discrepancies.
Yeah.
Yes, and of course, Paul wrote half of it, and he only never used Yahweh's name, and Paul did not quote Yahweh accurately. He misstated his own history, and
his own name.
One prophecy. Yeah, he misstated his own name and got his one prophecy wrong.
But by the way, when you're saying 300,000, it should be pointed out there's only like 185,000 words or thereabout.
That is correct.
Exactly.
That is correct. That is correct.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
There's almost twice as many discrepancies as there are words.
That's a lot of twisting.
Yeah, that's why other than Yosha's words, and as recorded by Matan Yah, I don't go to the Greek. I have really no interest in the Greek, and only then I'll look at the Greek superficially, for the purpose of trying to understand what Hebrew word the Greek was used to translate. And when you do that, I think you can get some pretty profound insights. But if you don't do that, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Papyri 46, is that part of, is that Matthew's in Papyri 46?
It's Paul's, is principally Paul's.
So what's the oldest Matthew?
I can look it up for you, but there are, of Matan Yah, there are many, many, many old manuscripts. The difficulty of Matan Yah is that, unfortunately, tell you what we have. Of Matan Yah, we have Papyrus 40, 475, 70, 637, 638, 615, 639, 71, 616, 475, 476, 611, 162, 163, 644, 610. I think I mentioned 138, but if I didn't, I don't see it there. 138, 67, 141, 69, 371 are all pre-Constantine manuscripts of Matanyah. Mark, for example, 165, 166, 168, 169, and 170, and 171. So a group that's highly, that was found essentially in the same place at the same time. So there is really one document for Mark, because those are all related. They were found in the same place at the same time. Matanyah, they're found huge over a huge period of time, all the way from 40, which is a very, very old papyrus, all the way up to 637 and 638, so over a long, long period of time. The only one that has more old papyri than Matanyah is Yahuqanan. So, you know, lots and lots of material. But the problem we have with Matanyah is that it was originally written in Hebrew, and then it was translated from Hebrew into Greek. And it would be wonderful to have a copy of it in Hebrew. Then I think you could analyze every word. But I think you can analyze every word now, so long as you're analyzing the Hebrew. If you're translating the Greek into Hebrew, and then the Hebrew into the English, I think you get a much better understanding of what the jots and the tittles say. Or in Hebrew, the yods and the tittles, what they have to say. So, for example, there is a place where we read in the Greek and then translate it into English, my God, why have you separated yourself from me? And it's in the Hebrew, it's really interesting because, Larry, you know the answer to this. When he said, my God, my God, was he was God singular or plural?
That was singular right there.
Yeah, it
was L-E-L.
Yeah, which is really uncommon.
Very.
Because, you know,
in the very
Yahweh,
next passage, he goes to Elohim again, so then
it's mighty ones. Yeah, and it's because Yahweh manifests himself in two ways. He manifests himself as the Son, which is tangible and physical, and he manifests himself as the set-apart Spirit. He is one, but there are two very important manifestations of his nature, and he uses the plural almost universally of Eloah, which would be Elohim. But here, the Spirit has not yet returned to Yahweh, and you've got the Son, the physical manifestation down there on that pole, it's just El. But you'd also have to say, if Yahusha was supposed to be the fullness of the Godhead, who in the hell is he talking to that he's calling his God? You know, if he's the totality of God, if Jesus is your God, who is he talking to?
Exactly.
Yeah. How could, if he's the totality of God, how could he separate from himself? Was he schizophrenic? I mean, it's an impossible scenario. But if if he's a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, and a diminished manifestation because the set apart Spirit was upon, saturated, if you will, this particular soul, then the set apart Spirit can leave, can't she?
Mm-hmm.
And why would the set apart Spirit of Yahweh have to leave before what happened next, which was he breathed his last?
Can't go there.
Can't. Well, two things. One is, God can't die.
Uh-huh. And you
can't, a body can die. Yeah, a body can die. Sacrificial lamb's body can die. God can't die. So the totality of God that was on Yahusha had to leave because God can't die. And the second part is, there's one place God can't go, and that is the place of separation from God, Sheol. And that's where the soul of Yahusha was headed. So the set-apart Spirit, which is, you know, part of Yahweh, can't go there. So it's perfectly obvious as to why Yahweh separated himself from Yosha at that moment. There's two reasons that he did so. A, God can't die, and B, he can't go to the place of separation. So now I'm going to tell you there's a third, and the third is maybe as important as any of them, which is by making this statement and the fact that the statement was a citation of the 22nd Psalm, he told us where to look for answers, didn't he? You want to understand what was happening there? You want to understand why Yahweh was separating himself from him?
Go to the Torah.
Yeah, go to the 22nd Psalm and see what it says. And then realize that the guy that was predicting this 1,000 years before it happened is the foremost expert on the Torah. You know, how are you going to realize that Dode predicted exactly what he was going to say and what was going to happen to him 1,000 years before he said it and 1,000 years before he endured crucifixion and not view the rest of what Dode wrote, like his longest psalm, the 119th? How are you going to view one thing is obviously true and the other, well, maybe not? That observing the Torah thing, we're going to reject that.
Yeah, I don't know how you think in your brain that you can take part of it and not part of it. You know, it's like I'll take the Old Testament, but I don't want that part of it. You know,
how can Paul be right in that the old system is pornography and Yosha's quoting it?
Yeah.
So my God, why have you completely and literally forsaken me, Azab? What would you guys guess? You know, there's two conjugations. Imperfect, which means this is an ongoing separation. And perfect means this was a temporary separation. Which one do you think that Azab was written in?
Temporary.
Perfect.
Yeah, the perfect. Absolutely. Temporary. Had to be. In fact, if you wanted an absolute guarantee that you understood the difference between ongoing and temporary, one time only, this would be the moment, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Good example.
Yes, because the soul and the spirit are rejoined. The separation isn't ongoing. 2 days later, the soul and spirit are rejoined. So it had to be temporary. It tells you that the perfect describes that which is temporary, which means that the imperfect tells you that which is ongoing. That's a pretty good insight there. Now, the call stem was used here. The call stem, this is the perfect place for the call stem to be used. The call stem says, this is literally happening. This is genuine. This isn't something that is, I'm telling you, that's nuanced here. I mean, the separation is real. That's what the call stem says. So you learn, you get great affirmation at the aspects of Hebrew grammar by recognizing the perfect is total and complete and at a point in time, and the call is literal and actual. So, and by the way, even the question, Ma, you know, why? Ma is as much about how and what as it is in why. You know, what was happening here? Why was this happening here? You know, what's going on? And all of that is answered. Is there almost every one of you guys came to know Yahweh when I was translating a chapter, a volume called the Zob, Separation. Is there a worse word than a Zob and anywhere in Hebrew?
No.
No.
No, that's utter separation. Yeah. I mean, that's
horrible.
Same as damned.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's damned, to be separated, to be estranged. There's nothing worse than this. So would you, if Yosha is saying it of Yahweh at this moment, is there anything that could have happened to him that would be more torturous?
No.
And no. He knows, you know, at this point, he knew Yahweh. I mean, I think I know him pretty well. I think all of us know him pretty well. But what we know doesn't even compare to the what Yosha knows. And to be separated from Yahweh right now would be the greatest penalty you could ever impose upon any of us. Can you imagine how traumatic this would have been for that soul? I mean, it's just almost, yeah, it's incomparable. You just can't even fathom what it means.
No.
But, you know, Azab explains what he endured. And then this next statement, far from, it's rakok, remote and distant in time, separated in space, alienated, and no longer in any kind of a close association, which is from rakok, meaning to be removed and distant, to be sent off and to go far away. Out of, separated from men, is Yahusha. You know, his job description is Yahusha. It's Yahweh saving us.
Mm-hmm.
But at that very moment, Yahweh's not there.
No.
Yahweh can't be there. He can have his soul endure all of this, but Yahweh can't be there. And therefore, what he's saying is, you know, I chose the name Yosha to tell you who was saving you and how I was saving you. That's what Yosha means. It tells us that Yahweh is the one saving us. But at that very moment, I'm not going to save my own soul. I'm going to sacrifice my own soul. So guess who's not Yosha anymore? Yeah, the sacrificial lamb that's right there. That body, right? And but he... To have Dode tell us his name, tell us the name of the individual is going to make the quote. That's what he said. He's got Yosha right here. He's telling us the name of the person making the quote 1,000 years before it happened. And he's saying that to be a Zob from Yahweh, those are distressful, groaning, anguishing, Zagah words. These are anguishing words.
And these prophecies are incredible. I mean, they're earth shattering. They really, really are. You know, I've approached a couple of atheists about Daniel, where he's talking about, you know, okay, Babylon's going to get crushed by the Persians and the Medes, and then along is going to come the Greeks, and then after that's going to come Rome.
Right.
And it's going to be the hardest to get rid of.
Right, and Rome's going to endure and tread upon the entire world right to the last days.
Which is what it's doing today. I understand who runs this country, and it's got nothing to do with any guy that has his ass parked in the White House, other than he's their puppet. But I will say this. When you can in advance tell people what can clearly, easily be verified, you know, which empires are going to be ruling in a successive order, I find it shocking that doesn't wake people up. It really doesn't.
I know.
I don't know why.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, the argument used to be that Daniel was written after the conquest of Rome over Greece, and therefore it was written after the fact. But the problem is we have copies of Daniel that go way back before that. And then, but it's not just that Daniel predicts the empires and names them by name. And it's not, you know, it's not just the symbolism. There's another review of all of them where it says, you know, this one is Persia, this one is Greece, this one is Rome. I mean, he goes right through and said, you know, I want to see what the symbolism is. And he says, this is what these countries are long before it happened. But he also, and we have, you know, copies of Daniel that date 200 BCE, he's predicting the day that Yosha is going to arrive and what's going to happen. On the exact day that he arrives, 500 years before it occurred, and we've got copies of the Dagon book that precede the event by 200 years. You know, I don't know how you can claim that, oh, you know, it's made up. This is an astonishing prophecy. And now, when there's only one other thing to convey here. I mean, the big thing you want to convey is that the set apart spirit is what made the physical manifestation of Yahweh as Yahusha.
And he tells us that Yahusha Yah. He's very right. clear that the spirit of discernment, the spirit of this, and the spirit of that. Yeah, it's all yeah. what.
And he left that man so that the physical body could become the sacrificial lamb, and the physical body could die. But it wasn't God dying because God wasn't there. And then he pointed us to this psalm that explains exactly what is happening, and he gives the exact name Yahusha. And then he said, I continually call out, Ikara. Well, what was he doing there? What was the purpose of that day, of the following day, and of the next day? What is the title that Yahweh ascribes to those days?
Moed Mikre. Yeah.
Yeah, Mikre. And Mikre is based upon what verb?
Ikara.
Ikara. What's the word they use next? It was Kara. I continually call out Kara. I want to be welcomed
those,
and I want
one
to
of those signposts. One of those signs out there. And it's not like the blood moons either. It's not after the fact.
No.
You know.
By my God, Elohim. By my God.
First time I read all this, it was like embarrassing that I was so stupid.
Yeah, I know. It's exactly the same thing. Yeah,
it was
so clear.
I didn't have to
profound.
Argue with you
so,
about what is right or not. I said, oh, no, that's right. Oh, God, I'm so stupid.
Yeah. Because, you know, well, part of it is because you and I and Larry and Don and James and Hedro, we all started to exercise our Nesama. And once you start exercising it, on quality material, which would be the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, yeah. all of a sudden you say, "Oh boy!
Oh, duh.
How did I miss that?
Goosebump!
Yeah, goosebump!
Uh-huh.
Boy,
I get a lot of goosebumps.
So I continually call out. So he's announcing this is the Kara of his God, my God. Throughout the day, because it's still the day, because the moment it becomes night, we've moved on from Pesach, and we're now in Bukurim. But you do not answer. Lo Ana. What does Yahweh tell us to Ana? You know, doesn't he have the verb Ana in four of the seven Mikra? And it's, you know, come in to answer Yahweh's invitation and come into the presence of the feminine manifestation.
Absolutely.
The feminine
manifestation
of his life just left. So he's talking about Kara here, and he says, you know, throughout the day, I'm calling out to you, but you, Lo Ana, you're not answering. You're not answering. So Yahusha is going to suffer the plight that we would otherwise suffer, his soul, because Yahweh was not answering. And it's when we answer Yahweh's invitations, then we don't suffer. We don't
Does
suffer.
Does that not also mean that the light is gone, but also the protection is gone?
Absolutely. The power is gone. The power has gone. The enrichment has gone. The light has gone. But the protection is gone. All of it, yeah. The very presence of Yahweh. All of it's gone. I mean, it's to be one moment inspired and empowered and protected, and the next minute to be completely dumbfounded and vulnerable.
Well, keep in mind now that the darkness of Sheol could not contain this soul.
Right.
This soul marched down there or went down there however, and presented itself, and
Satan
just he couldn't hold him.
Yeah, I couldn't keep him there. But to guess what couldn't go into Sheol is that light, because Sheol would be the place of utter darkness.
Darkness.
The separation from the light, if the light went there, so the light of Yahweh could not go there. And by night, there is no relief for me, because you talked, Hidro, about the set-apart spirit being the protection, the comforter.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Guess what? When he went into the darkness of the night of Matzah, because the night brought him, his soul, to Matzah, and the celebration of Matzah, which brought his soul to Sheol, to be the yeast that is being removed from us, he has now gone to the place of total darkness. And so he's saying that that there is no relief for me. There was no protection in Sheol. The comforter, the protector.
But he was sinless. Therefore, he could not be healed.
Yeah.
He paid the price.
Right.
That the only one could pay.
So
that is correct.
Being sinless means he hit the mark, because sin means to miss the mark, which means
correct.
He observed Torah.
Completely.
So it was the Torah that saved him.
That is correct. Yeah, that doesn't mean, by the way, that everything he did in his life was perfect. It doesn't mean that he never looked at a girl and said, yeah, that'd be fun. It didn't mean that he never ate a honey badger. All it means is that he closely examined and carefully considered the Torah and never wavered from his affinity for the Torah. And the Torah is the perfecting document. But, you know, for Christians to say, well, you know, he was perfect, and he's the only one that can perfectly honor the Torah. Well, if he was perfectly in compliance with the Torah, you would think that would be a good thing, then, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And why aren't you?
That's the bugaboo for the Christians, yeah.
I've noticed we've all got something in common. It's what I call the itch that you just can't scratch. And you just have to question and find the answer. My daughter-in-law, I contacted her a couple of weeks ago. She had the itch, and I just let it do its work. But I explained to her about religion and Christianity. It's like how it works, how we're all deceived. Religion and Christianity is like someone eating food and telling you how nice it tastes. You don't get any nourishment. And I said, with Shema in Torah, you have to eat the food for yourself. So you have to study, and you have to learn. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
It's,
I think the moment we stop studying, the moment we stop thinking and analyzing and learning is the moment we're dead.
Yeah.
I think our lives are literally fueled by the quest to learn, to know, to understand. It's the fuel.
I think so is yours.
I think it is too. You know, it's why one of my responses today to the ad hominem attack was that I think I've got a pretty good knowledge of who Yahweh is. I think we all do. And I think a pretty good understanding of what it is that he's offering and expects. I think we all do. I am absolutely certain that when it comes to the details, that I know far fewer of them than I don't know. In other words, what I don't know vastly exceeds what I know. And I'm really happy about that.
That goes with what you said this morning. Let's see, how did you place it? You said the air between your... No, the... The air between your ears is greater than the solid matter.
That's correct. Exactly. And so the details that I don't know exceed my understanding of the details. Now, I love details. I mean, you guys all know I'm a fanatic for the details. I love the details even more, Kirk, than you love the details. I mean, I love the details.
You know, Terry told me, you know, she thinks I'm a nitpicker because I'm
big at
it. But she said when it's you, I've met my match.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's true. I'm really focused on the details. I love the details. I'm passionate about the details. But I'm here to tell you that when it comes to the details of the Torah, there's an overwhelming discrepancy between the details I understand and the details that I do not understand. Now, the details I don't understand aren't because they are difficult to understand. It's just that there's only so much time, and I would love to understand them all, but I'm actually glad that I don't understand them all. And I'm actually glad that there's the majority I don't understand because, you know, eternity is a very long time. And if any of us knew it all now, if we really had a firm grasp on how all the details fit together to form the big picture, how would we grow? What would we do in eternity? How could it be any fun?
But that would be impossible because it's an expanding universe, and the new one would be an expanding universe too. So.
That's true.
So the good news is that's good because we
aren't you glad
that
you don't know
do.
It all? I mean, I'm
sure.
glad that I don't know it all.
Yeah.
I'm happy to understand because I think understanding is powerful and
absolutely.
It's comforting. But and I'm also excited that every time we explore a new detail, the new detail affirms and sheds additional light on what we've come to know. But
mm-hmm.
No, by golly, I don't know all of the of the details. That's kind of the fun of the whole thing. So is there a likelihood that any of us, including me, is going to say something the spur of the moment that's inconsistent with one of the details? Absolutely.
You just inspired me because you said eternity is a very long time. And the thought that came to me is, I will now use the phrase, eternity is longer than time. But
yes, it is.
I just realized I don't know myself because I'm growing. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not the same. Even in my thoughts, I'm growing
right.
and I'm learning. So I don't know. I don't know what I knew even seconds ago.
Right.
Because a new thought comes in. It's an addition.
Right. It's an addition. You know, one of the other things is that in this ad hominem attack, It was talked about my personal interpretations. And I want to share with you something that dawned on me, maybe just this morning, that everything we come to know is based upon what Yahweh has shared is a personal interpretation. We are personally interpreting Yahweh's testimony. And it's our personal interpretations, our unique personas and attitudes and proclivities that we're going to take into eternity. It's
mm-hmm.
some of the ignorance that we have we're going to take into eternity, too. That's all the stuff that's going to make eternity interesting and fun.
That's our character.
Yeah, it's our character. It's the sum total of who we are that gets to go into eternity, and we're going to take some ignorance in. We're going to, and ignorance is simply, we're going to take some not knowing in because we're going to grow by coming to know more.
There's one thing I don't want to take with us, and that's that mental scar I got today from you in that dress.
I knew I'd get
I really want to take that
know,
with us. Next week I want
that
to be gone.
When I was young and foolish, I was...
don't do it again. I can't stand it.
Yeah, once for 2 minutes was more than enough. But, you know, it dawned on me that Yahweh wrote that in the imperfect. And it dawned on me that at the time he wrote it, everyone wore the same outfit. And so it seemed pretty obvious to me that if the things that were most important to him made his top 10 list, and cross-dressing got one reference at a time when everybody wore the same outfit, and it was also written in the imperfect, that, man, if Dode made the cut, and he violated most all of the things on the top 10 list, that my conclusion was, is it possible that somebody who had, put on women's clothing could still be invited into the covenant? And that was the conclusion I had that was, I guess, so irritating to this individual. it seems pretty obvious to me. I don't know how you could say that God would preclude somebody who did this once as part of a fraternity prank from being part of the covenant when he included a guy who was guilty of murder.
At one time, we were all guilty of advancing that which will kill other people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Really? Yep. At one
Absolutely.
Time, all
every
of
one
us
of us
here were.
Every one
and
of us.
If we can be forgiven of that, which is, wow, you know, that's the biggest sin that Yahweh talks about.
Well, you know,
all of
the unforgivable sin, which is misrepresenting his name, negating his name, and offering testimony that is false and leads to lifelessness, even it was written in the imperfect, which means the moment you stop doing it, you're no longer in violation of it.
Wow.
And God doesn't expect a lot from us. You know, the Torah was
he expects one thing, there'll
people.
Be people that mislead us forever, and we'll fall for it a good percentage
right.
of the time. He
right.
expects that much,
yeah.
you know, and therefore, to know anybody, he has to, you know, blow by all the mistakes they made in the past, and as you say, not even see them anymore, because he doesn't want to see them. He doesn't care about them.
No, and that's the beauty of the whole thing, that you say, all right, you're going to draw your line in the sand and say that your interpretations are misleading because of cross-dressing and saying that somebody who has in one time
I never even knew you wrote about cross-dressing.
I've
read all your stuff.
I never had, and so I made a mistake on a show 3 or 4 days ago. And one of the members of the Covenant family pointed out when I said, you know, cross-dressing is not among Yahweh's interests. He doesn't tell us about cross-dressing. And someone Googled it, and if you Google it, you'll find a reference to, there's one statement in the Torah about cross-dressing. And it says, I don't want, women to wear men's clothes. I don't want men to wear women's clothes. That's an abomination to me. And the next day I had to come back on and say, okay, I goofed. I said that God didn't talk about that. He did. And now, because of the fact that men and women wore the same outfits, the same sandals, the same robes back then, I think it's incumbent upon us to figure out why he said it. And it turned out to be a really interesting discussion as to thinking about why God would care about it. And the conclusion I came to is because he doesn't want us to misrepresent who we are. He doesn't want any false pretense is half of the reason. Don't do what Paul did and pretend to be someone you're not. And second, you know, Yahweh just wants you to be straight. You know, don't pretend to be somebody you're not to earn somebody's trust and then mislead them. And the second thing is that men and women are equally important to Yahweh. We have equally important roles, but our roles are different. And when we understand the roles of husband and wife and men and women and mothers and fathers in a family, then we're better able to understand Yahweh and the covenant. And so, Yahweh does not mask who he is. He doesn't misrepresent who he is in terms of this the set-apart spirit or he is Heavenly Father. And we ought not either. We ought to celebrate the difference. And so, you know, that was the conclusions. And so that was an example of, okay, I didn't know one of those details. Somebody pointed it out. I looked it up. They were right. I was wrong. And it was turned out to be a genuine blessing. I mean, I was enriched by learning what Yahweh was trying to convey. But every bit of that is an interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And the statement is just right there, it just lays flat. So I think it is incumbent upon us to question, okay, why would he say this when their apparel was the same? Why say it? And, you know, think it through from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So we grew by somebody pointing out a detail. But...
Mm-hmm.
You know, ultimately, it is all about us using our Nesama to reason our way through what he had to say and coming to know him better, coming to understand what he's offering better, because the more we use our ability to exercise good judgment and analyze and focus on his testimony, observing it, closely examining and carefully considering it, not only do we grow, but it puts in a position where we're doing what we're doing now. as flawed implements, we're simply sharing what Yahweh has taught us. And, you know, if you
yeah,
want to know him
and,
like we know him, we're inviting you to do the same thing we've done.
If flawed instruments couldn't share Yahweh's words, then nobody would be allowed to
share.
Read
right.
them or share them. I mean, you just,
right.
it's, you know, again, it's like everything else, you know, in the religious corner, you know, they think you have to be perfect before you can walk towards God, when in fact Yahweh says, walk towards me, you'll be made
and
perfect.
And I'll make you perfect. Yeah, Larry,
that's
you think, did is there a book in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms called Yahweh?
Called Yahweh? No.
Yeah, is there a book called Yahweh? There's a book where Yahweh spoke through Moshe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a book where Yahweh spoke through Yosha.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yes,
a book where Yahweh
sure
spoke through Dod.
Yep.
There's a book where Yahweh spoke through Yashaya, isn't there?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
so they're all Yahweh's words.
Through Hosea,
pretty slow,
through Malachi, through Zechariah. Do you think that maybe Yahweh has made a point here that, you know, I'm going to convey my testimony through flawed implements. I'm going to convey what I have to say to you through men, because, you know, that's who I want to communicate with. That's what it's all about in the first place.
Yeah, and by the way, you were, it's just obvious things like, okay, the guy that's going to be the main spokesman's got the thick tongue problem, and the
right.
guy that's going to have the first kid's, you know, 100
right.
years old, and
right.
the guy that's going to understand the Torah to the degree that probably
right.
the most advanced degree maybe any man on earth ever did was a, as you put it, scallywag. Okay?
Yeah, scallywag.
You know, I mean,
it's just
yeah,
perfect
these,
Yahweh
these,
saying, I'm going to use flawed implements to expose who I am and share what I'm offering. Because, you know, for eternity, it's those flawed implements that I want to spend my time with. I like them.
And yet people line up behind who? The silver-tongued.
Right.
And the people who act perfect.
Was Moshe perfect if he had a speech impediment?
No.
Hell no.
Was Dod
perfect?
I mean,
hell no.
No.
Are you perfect?
I think Scott.
No.
I'm a long way from. I think Scott put it real well one day when I was doing a show with him. You know, what religion was Adam? What religion was Abraham? What religion was Noah? They all come up empty on that, don't they? There is no religion, and he doesn't deal with religious people. It's you yourself has said it. You know, why would anybody really listen to what a theologian has to say? I mean, seriously. I mean, Yahweh doesn't engage religious theologians.
What we're doing is we're passionate about what Yahweh said. We've come to know him. We've come to love him. We've come to be passionate about his testimony. We have found what he has to say extraordinarily profound, enlightening, consistent, wonderful, marvelous, in the detail and in the big scope of things. We're enthused about it, and we want to share it because the more people who embrace what he had to say and come to enjoy his company, the richer our experience in eternity is going to be. But we're not doing it selfishly. It's not just because eternity will be better if the family's bigger. We're doing it because we can't help but do it.
That's another thing. If you saw a guy, you saw a guy walking in.
Right.
You know, he was about to step off into the abyss. You know,
right.
I mean,
right.
And or he was
wouldn't
driving
you reach
his
for him?
Car.
Wouldn't you reach out your hand and say, "Hey, don't
yeah,
do that. Grab my
warn.
Hand off." Right.
Yeah. It's not like you're some nut or something. You're just trying to do what's decent. And
right.
and I swear, there's people that think that doing what's decent is an attack. You know, I wish 40 years ago. I really do. I wish 40 years ago somebody would have just laid all this down in front of me, and I wouldn't have had to look so hard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, it didn't work that way, but it still worked.
You know,
I wish
that had been that way because there's people I met along life's way that that their lives may have been profoundly influenced by the enthusiasm and the passion that comes from knowing Yah. And, you know, I wish that I had known it sooner and could have raised my children from the get-go. And while I have a wonderful relationship with them, one is really close but not home, and the other is absolutely home. But, you know, it's what would have happened if I had come to know this 20 years earlier? You know, it's, and so, yeah, I wish I had too. But then part of me says, Larry, I'm glad I didn't, because it's the humility that comes from having been so stupid, and the joy that comes from knowing how much better the truth is from what I previously believed. That's part
well,
of the excitement of the whole
that's,
thing.
That's, it all worked out the way that it worked out. That's
right.
Fine that it worked
right.
out. But you make a good point. But at the same time, there were people that I care enough about.
Yeah.
I wish I could have. I wish I would have raised my kids differently.
You know,
they won't
listen.
Yeah,
that's right.
We have different.
We have different role models in the sense of Moshe and Dode. Dode figured out very young. And Moshe was 80 years old. You know, we have a different we have another. Old guy and Abraham. He too was old. So
hey, quit picking on them. Quit picking
yeah.
on them now. Come
well,
on.
You know, I'm an old guy too. So,
yeah.
So you know, it's I know you remind me, Don, from time to time. You've got faults that are older than I am. But how old really is? And I'm 60. How old really is 60? When compared to eternity?
Inconsequential.
It's not comparable. It's not computable.
It's meaningless.
Yeah.
It's
I look at it, okay, it's been just 10 years or so, maybe 15 years, that we have gradually made this journey into out of the darkness into the light,
definitely been more than 10 years.
Yeah, it's been more than 10 years that we've made this journey out of the darkness into the light, and look how many people have come along with us. Look how many directly lives, families. Lives have been transformed, have become part of the covenant, have come to know Yahweh.
That's what we got from reading.
It certainly wasn't too late, was it?
No, that's what we got from reading your emails today.
Yeah. Look how many people have come to know Yahweh because we chose to walk out of the darkness into the light. It wasn't too late. It wasn't too late for any of them. It wasn't too late for any of us.
There's some cool people along the way. Did you laugh out loud today? I mean, the other day when you got that email from Roy, he said, "I've got all this busy stuff, but I'll do macro evolution. I'll write a paper on it, but I'll have it take me at least 2 weeks." I'm going. Are you kidding? 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. And by the way, he's already well on his way to writing. He sent me another email today to. To keep me appraised that, and by the way, he was the other email that came through during this period of time where he said, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, all you did is you pointed me in the right direction. You cleared away some of the gunk that had cluttered the path so that I couldn't see the path that Yahweh was laying out, and then you shone some light on the path and gave me some tools that I could use. To examine what he had to say, and you know, and from there it was, you know, it was me and God talking directly. But you know, it's just doing what family does. It's you know, this is a wonderful family. Let's shine the light on the path so that more people of their own volition, who are really interested in knowing, can come in and join us. It's a marvelous thing. And so anyway, yeah, he was he's well into it, and now he is, in my view, I think he is the smartest person that I know.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, he's really, and he would chafe at that. He says, you know, I don't have any novel insights. All I'm doing is making some connections between things that are well known. But the connections he makes, I think, are brilliant. And yet, there's nothing that he said that I find difficult to understand. It's not difficult to grasp. In fact, everything that he has said thus far is exactly as I had thought it would be. It's just that he has some evidence.
You're talking about Chris, is that
Roy,
right?
Roy, the guy
from
Australia. He has a way of isolating on what the core components are of the evidence and how that evidence should be connected to lead to conclusions. His conclusions are exactly the same as our own. He just provides some insights as to how it all relates that are powerful. Like, I had never thought about that a God that could create what is clearly a six-dimensional and probably seven-dimensional conception, a universe, has to be outside of the lesser dimensions. Mm-hmm. And that creating dimensions that are lesser than you is an extraordinarily easy thing to do because you're infinitely beyond any dimension that is smaller than you are.
Yeah, because you're back to a piece of paper. I mean, you know, you're in the next dimension up, and you're drawing the picture again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
It's literally us in three dimensions drawing a picture on a piece of paper is how infinitely superior we are in three dimensions to two dimensions, and Yao was up there in seven dimensions.
Well, I mean, that's why there is, you know, everything that Yahweh talks about, you know, can be confirmed 40 different ways, whether we know it or not.
Think of how powerful those insights from Roy. I mean, in terms of affirmation of not only who he is, but where we're going.
Well, I mean, it's even like, Apollos and his 18 friends, three sets of sixes. You know?
Yes, that's true.
You know what I mean? It's everywhere. It's all over. There's
like how many years transpired between revealing through
Jabba and then Paul.
That this man with the name Shaw would be the plague of death.
666 years. You know, and I know there's another 666 in there somewhere. I mean, Lisa, she calculated one time that
Shaul is 666.
The
number
he
of
was
the,
66%
the name.
66% of a New Testament.
Yeah, well, that's true. And yes, but Shaul's name is 666.
It's just insane, you know. It goes on, and everything's there. And then people act as though they're stuck in some kind of matrix and they can't see their way out of it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not stuck in this matrix. I'm just here for a little while, you know.
I'm not stuck in it either. I know in my physical body, I'm limited in it, but it's that limitation goes away when I'm studying his testimony, and it will profoundly be a thing of the past and the future.
Yeah, do I find things to be a big deal now that I won't then? I'm sure that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things there are things today that are a minor irritant to me that used to mean
like
the world to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true. That is,
you know, Shaul?
Yes?
Is that the same as, I know it's not the same person, but the Shaul that was with Dode, that tried to kill Dode?
It's the same name.
Same name.
Right, so you got Dode, who you could say kept the covenant,
mm-hmm.
and you had Shaul, who was trying to kill him, that was keeping the covenant.
Yeah, and can
you... Yeah, and there's another example, you know? I mean, it's all over the place.
Well, look at this as another way. The Yahweh wanted Dode, and in fact wanted Dode to be the king. Because he so wanted Dode to be the king that when Yahweh returns, he's going to model his kingdom after Dode. And so Dodd, who was Torah observant, is the person that Yahweh wanted to be the king, and he celebrated him as king.
Yeah.
Shaul was the one that the people wanted
choice.
To be king. And,
yeah.
and Yahweh kept on saying, you know, they wanted a king like other countries had a king, and Yahweh said, No, you don't. You don't want that. That's not good for you. You don't want that. And they said, yeah, that's what we want. He said, okay, that's what you want. You can have it. And so Shaul was the people's choice.
Yeah.
Paul is the people's choice.
Ah.
Dodd is the one that walked against the grain, that walked the path of greatest resistance. He walked the path that Yahweh walked.
Okay,
and
yeah.
so, you know, the people followed Shaul, and Dodd walked alone.
Wow.
But Dodd was never alone because Dodd is with and was always with Yahweh.
As are we.
As are we. As are we. And so, yeah, I think the story of Shaul and Dodd is the same story of Yahusha and Shaul.
Yes.
Yeah. That might make a good show topic one time, the parallels between Saul and
yes.
Shaul.
Yes. Yeah, Shaul and Dodd, and is the same parallel between Yahusha.
And Yahusha was also known as the son of Dodd.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he actually, isn't that interesting? Yeah,
he said
he would be a descendant of Dodd. So
yeah.
Dodd to Yahusha, and then from Yahusha to Dodd again, because how is Yahweh coming back? Is the in the model of Dodd? You know, he's going to manifest himself out and create the kingdom of Dodd. And so it's there's a direct line that way, just as there's a direct line to the people's choice. Because what did Yahusha say about to Paul? He says, you know, I came in my father's name. He didn't accept me. But one's going to come in his own name, and in him you're going to accept. The people accepted Shaul, didn't they?
Yeah.
Was King Saul, was he a Benjamite?
I think so.
Wow.
I think so, too.
I think so, too. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Pretty good parallel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good going. He drew.
Wow.
Yeah. It's all the details. Now, you know, I think God cheats in some of this stuff. I mean, he got to make it all work so that it communicated perfectly. It's not really cheating. It's being consistent. It's just being sharp and being really, really smart. Yeah, he's just the perfect artist. He just made every stroke work. Every stroke works.
That's fair.
The more closely you examine them, you know, the better they look. Yeah, every stroke works.
Yeah.
He's the perfect artist. By the way, Kirk, I do love your the ideas that you have for the covers of each of the books. I think that's it's going to work brilliantly, and I like I don't know whose idea if it was yours or Jackie's or whose idea, but to on the inside front cover explain with those
similarities. That was Jackie. Yeah. Jackie thought that'd be a nice touch.
Yeah,
I agree.
Jackie's a sweetheart.
She is. Well, I'll probably be starting them on Sunday. That's the painting part, and we'll see how they look out now.
Okay, keep track of
your posted
your time
as we get.
We're all going to reimburse you, and I can send some of my EFA because Richard Donald
yesterday. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since Richard and I are trying to get in here and share on this thing, how do we join your guild?
Well, I don't know if I have a deal. I have.
Well, you're.
I bet I can turn on the computer, so I have a business Facebook, you know. So I mean, but Terry is my emo person, so.
No, we want to get in on your pay grade.
On your pay grade? It's such an attractive package. It's pretty good.
You guys keep talking about it and the benefits. And Richard and I are just going, boy, our ears just went right away.
I think it's more beneficial. It's more benefits than monetary. So
they're
long term, but they're great.
Yeah, yeah, like when Richard docked my pay today, it was
quite a blow. Quite a blow.
It wasn't a significant blow. You know, there. By the way, there's a number of people that are doing things like. The guy that communicates, his name is not BB or Bloodbath, but he uses that in the forum, and he's posting a bunch of the shows we do, and he does it on YouTube. And he was asking, he says, you know, on YouTube, there is a way that listeners and viewers can contribute to them, and if there is a financial model associated with your presentation, then that the contribution can be used to promote it. And he says, you know, are you okay with that? And I said, yeah, I'm okay with that. I mean, it's the more people that hear it, the better. And if there's a way that people can choose to listen to share a few shekels that causes the search engines to prioritize them and more people hear it, how's that a bad thing? You know, it's the money's not coming to me. The money's not coming to you. But oh, absolutely. You know, I it's like the three books now that are available in hardback, Yada Yada, Intro to God and Questioning Paul, are all available now.
Yeah, and if people want to spend $89 or whatever it is,
yeah,
and get
and
the
you,
books,
they can get all three for whatever it is. I think when you look
that's
at
really
the size
cheap.
Of the book, I think it's really cheap. But you know, the company that's making it is making a profit doing it. I don't care.
No, let them.
I'm delighted they're doing
let
it.
Them.
Yeah, I'm delighted they're doing
they're
it.
They're not. They're not, I'm a publisher. They're not making. If
I can't
making
imagine
money,
them making much of a profit.
Yeah, I agree.
No, they're not.
There's another guy. I'll have an announcement on this next week that has created a Kindle version of Yada Yada, Intro to God. But he's created a Kindle version of it, and on the Kindle version, you have to charge for it. I think the lowest you can charge is like 99 cents. Is, are you okay with that? You know, yeah, I'm okay with that. Sure. You know, and whatever the 99 cents totals, whatever our share of the 99 cents is, you know, use it to promote it.
Yeah. Who cares?
Who cares?
Exactly. Yeah.
Nobody
cares.
I think it is inappropriate for us to be paid to share what Yahweh has shared with us. But it
see, I got a problem with that. I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
but I do think that it's A-OK to have people who want who've heard it, who say, you know, I want to have other people hear it, and if they want to make a contribution that enables other people to hear it, so long as it doesn't go to the Larianator, as long as it doesn't go to me, I'm fine with it.
First of all, I feel like an ass if people were sending me that. Some woman said, I said, she said something about, I'll be happy to pay for your time here or something. It was in a chat, and I said, no, I don't. We don't do that. We don't have donate buttons. She goes, oh, I'll take your address and send you something. And I said, you're not getting this. I said, no, you're not. And, of course, she was one of these that wanted to jump in with both feet and learn nothing. You know?
Yeah, and my view is that if we're accepting nothing and all we're doing is saying, listen,
we do this for fun.
All we are doing here is we're doing this for fun, and we're sharing what we learned.
Yeah, Richard and I are kind of we're going to hold out for more money.
Yeah,
good
yeah,
luck with that.
Yeah, you know,
hold on tight.
You know, the Richard situation for me is just so inspiring, Don, because here's a guy that was literally broke. I mean, roaming the streets looking for a place to sleep. Looking for food, for want of clothing, for want of a job. Here's a guy that was completely as destitute as you could possibly be in terms of worldly goods, and yet now he is supporting, paying out of his own pocket, and devoting his own time to one of the most well-read, most visited sites, sharing Yahweh's testimony.
Yeah, it's quite a story. Yes. He called in one time. I love listening to him, too.
Yeah, it's a heck of a
story. And I
got
to run.
An inspiring
dog.
I
got to run, too. My dog is about to run out the door by herself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
My back's just about
Jordan
going to pieces.
Jordan Mensley,
Don,
right. Hedrow, Larry Corson, and JB.
Always fun.
And Yada.
Yeah, Barack.
Always a good night.
Keep me, good night, Joe.
Keep me posted, Kurt.
Okay.
Night.
Shalom. Good night, Joe. Bye-bye.
Good night.